Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Can you keep it down? I'm on yet another podcast. No, that podcast with that guy that we really like from Boston? The guy who writes all the cool computer books. Him! I'm on that podcast with him. It's another podcast with him. It's a yet another podcast. Oh, you're so confused. Meatloaf! Dinner is meatloaf! Don't you like meatloaf? Come on now!
That was the voice of Jeff Fritz. Jeff Fritz is a Microsoft MVP, an ASP.NET insider, a previous and welcome guest here. He's a Telerik evangelist and an aspiring Pluralsight author. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Mr. Liberty. It's great to be back.
I like that, Mr. Liberty. Maybe I can get everybody at Telerik to call me that.
There you go. Absolutely.
I'm sure Chris Sells would enjoy that.
Mr. Sells? Yes, absolutely.
So Mr. Sells, you call everybody that. So one of the reasons that I'm eager to have you back is that you have been an advocate, I believe, and certainly an explainer of the concept of OneASP.NET, which is a concept that is very much catching on. In fact, I'm reading professional ASP.NET 4.5 with C# and VB, and in that book, the first chapter describes OneASP.NET. So perhaps we could start with your providing just a quick overview of what is meant by that phrase.
Sure. So when ASP.NET started years and years ago, right, 2002, we saw the first release of ASP.NET. And we saw initially one project type. And you could go in and you could build with this one framework that you could work with. And that was what we now call web forms. Other people might call it classic ASP.NET. But it's this concept of building a form, and you do postback, and you have view state, and all these event-driven capabilities around that. Now, in the 11 years since then, we've seen additional frameworks pop up inside of ASP.NET. MVC, Web API, SignalR, the SPA frameworks have come to life. Web pages with Razor templating are now in play. And we have all these different child frameworks that Visual Studio helps us build, but helps us build separately from one another. It really feels like a series of different project types and different ASP.NETs, where if I'm building something with web forms, it's not easy for me to build MVC in as well. That mix in of these different frameworks just doesn't feel possible with the way that Visual Studio and our tooling has provided the framework for us. So the concept of OneASP.NET is this hybrid approach that says, you know what, these six child frameworks that we have here in 2013, they're all separate instruments in the same orchestra. Let's use them together and be able to take the best of each one of those in a hybrid project and get the most out of it, right? There are things that Web Forms is very, very good at. I can be very productive by just dragging a control onto my design surface, wiring it up to a data source, and I'm done. You'll see this with grids. You heard the typical story of somebody's giving a demonstration. They drag a grid on the screen. They drag a data source on, wire it up, and they're done. There's their web page. That's easy and simple to do, and you can do some maintenance behind that to make it extensible and be able to test that well, and it's great, but you lose the control of what those angle brackets and curly braces are that work with it. And that's where MVC comes in. I get full control, but I've got to write a lot more code. If you can use those two together, that's a OneASP.NET type of solution where I can use them together to deliver a cohesive solution, making the most of each of the tools in the framework. Now, what you're hinting at, Jesse, is that there's something very exciting coming up here in the next few months when we see the release of Visual Studio 2013. And that's going to be the real coming out party for OneASP.NET, because in Visual Studio 2013, when you say file new project, you choose your favorite language, mine's C#, and you select web, there's only one ASP.NET project type. And that's huge. That's huge. We can now use all of our tools together, and the tooling supports and encourages it.
Let me take you through a little bit more slowly the six pillars, if that's the right word, of ASP.NET. One is web forms, which is what I think of as ASP.NET Classic, the way we had been doing ASP.NET before MVC came along.
Yep.
The second is MVC, which supports not only the model view controller pattern, but also supports a lot of convention over configuration.
Oh, yes.
What are the other four? Let's take them one at a time.
Sure. So the next one in that batch after MVC would probably be web pages. So web pages is a way for us to write stripped down, very simple content generators using only Razor templates. So you can write a Razor template, right, with those .cshtml or .vbhtml extensions that use the funny @ markup and embed your VB or C# inside those templates to generate markup very, very quickly. It's a very simple project type. You're able to generate markup with very little interaction. You aren't going to be doing that much work on the server. And for a light website, it works great.
Okay, so that's three. We've got classic ASP.NET, MVC, web pages.
So the fourth one to come along is, well, let's talk about Web API next. So Web API is the RESTful framework that Microsoft gives us where we can interact with the server and get back content that's not intended all the time for humans to read, right? These are APIs that are set up and they work with the HTTP actions, those being get, post, put, delete, all those standard HTTP actions, and turn those into method calls on the server. You're going to interact with it. You're going to send your appropriate HTTP request headers that indicate that you prefer XML content type or maybe JSON content type, and you'll get data formatted back in the specified format you've said, I prefer this, in your HTTP headers. Really nice, easy to use. If you're familiar with MVC controllers, it almost feels, you know, like a natural outgrowth of that technology.
But the first word you hear every time you hear Web API is RESTful. Mm-hmm. And when you push folks on what REST is and what that means and what it implies, it's my experience you get a fair amount of hand-waving. Would you like to take a crack at what that implies?
So when I think of REST, I think of, it's not really a standard, but it's a way for us to specify and say, I'm sending content back and forth from the server, and it's stateless. It's transferring objects, getting responses that may or may not adhere to some standard format, and gives a lot more freedom for specification to the server that I'm working in a specific format. And it really embraces the capabilities of HTTP and says, let's use all of these things that are already there instead of adding on, like we saw with SOAP, envelopes and formatting and this very extensive XML language around it. We've already got the language around how we're going to be talking to the server. And REST has embraced that. Let's use those HTTP headers appropriately.
So REST is intrinsically a web protocol or a web approach.
Yes.
That uses the HTTP standards.
Yep. It uses the standards, embraces them. And when you talk about how that interacts with Web API, Web API just it will very easily adjust and adapt to those headers that you've specified. Really nice stuff.
Okay, so we've got four of the six. We've got forms, MVC, web pages, web API. Let's go to SignalR.
SignalR. This is the hot new one that I really like. So SignalR was born out of an open source project that was being done in the after hours by a couple of engineers at Microsoft. And it's a way for us to enable real-time communications with the web server. So our clients that are attached to the web server can subscribe to a SignalR hub, is what they're called, and you'll get communications from that hub where the hub is actually calling methods on the client. That's kind of weird, and that kind of, you know, shakes some people.
That's sick. That's insane.
Yeah, I know, right? Because I'm used to calling methods on the server, but now the server's calling methods on the client. So you get this really neat on-demand notification from the server when something happens. So the typical model that we used to see back in, the mid-2000s, the late-2000s, when you wanted to get real-time information from the server is, right, every so many minutes, let's ping the server, hey, do you have any new data for me? Hey, do you have any new data for me? But SignalR turns that on its head, and when there's new data, reaches out to all the attached clients and says, hey, go do this, and here's the payload for you to go do, you know, whatever action with.
Okay, but push has been around for a long time.
Certainly, but push is not the way that the web is structured, mm-hmm. right? The web is intended to be the server just sits there and waits for pull requests. Oh, yeah, here, you know, get this data. Here, post this data. The server is just an endpoint that we're interacting with. Well, for the server to reach back and issue commands to the client, that's not typically the way that the web's been structured. But with the innovations in HTML5 of WebSockets, we can now have this clear tunnel back and forth very, very easily on HTML5-enabled clients. There's ways that SignalR knows how to step down for other clients that don't support WebSockets, but that's a topic for a different discussion when we want to do a real deep dive on SignalR. It's okay. Neat stuff.
What's the sixth child?
So the sixth one is the single-page application. So single-page applications, right, we typically think of as a lot of HTML and JavaScript that live client-side in the browser. And they're reaching back and interacting with all kinds of services that live on the server so that they can deliver a very, very full-featured, almost fat client type of experience inside the browser for our customers, for our users. Great, great idea. It works very, very fast when you're working in the browser, right? If you have a desktop browser and you're attached to a single-page application, it really feels like a full application. Things like Google Mail, right, Gmail, are a really good example of this single-page application look and feel.
All right. Now, what you didn't mention was HTML5, CSS3, JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
And how do they work and play with OneASP.NET?
So those are all the markup, right, the content that we're delivering to our clients, to our attached clients. So all of these things, right, all six of them, can generate and deliver content that is HTML5, CSS3, and JavaScript, right? SignalR lives and breathes on the type of JavaScript that it's going to deliver, the type of JavaScript commands it's going to deliver to the browser. Web API is an endpoint that will be consumed by JavaScript typically when we use a browser as our client, right? I'm trying to be very clear in using the term client here because not all attached services, all attached clients to our ASP.NET servers are going to be browsers. We're going to start to see that they're applications, mobile apps, Windows 8 apps, these types of things that are now consuming and interacting with our one ASP.NET solution. That's big because we're going to break out of just HTML5, just CSS3 that are consuming and working with ASP.NET. So they're there. They're just not always going to be. They're not always going to be present in every solution. They're the content that we generate.
ASP.NET programmers who have been classic ASP.NET programmers until now have been able to go into Visual Studio and say, "I want to create a web form application." And even in 2012, they could create a web form application and pretty much ignore MVC. Does the advent of a single application template mean that they are now going to have to be a lot more aware of these other ASP.NET variants?
No, they don't. They don't need to be aware of them. You can still go into Visual Studio, and when you start that new project, you'll be prompted, hey, what parts of ASP.NET do you want in here? Do you want the web forms capabilities turned on and structured? Do you want the MVC components brought in and that structure with the controllers, models, and views folders laid out for you? Or would you like the web API stuff brought in and set up for you as well? These are prompted for you in the new OneASP.NET dialog that starts when you choose to start that new template. You don't have to include those if you don't want them. that's fine. You can continue developing just as you were. But if you're working in a project that does include them, nothing says you have to use them on every page. You can certainly say file, add new web form, and away you go. So while you don't have to use them, I would encourage you to check them out because I think there's some very interesting functionality in there that very much benefit the web forms developers in ways that they may not have considered in the past.
And does that dialogue allow you to choose more than one at a time?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, you can dial in, I think, four of the six frameworks right off the top because you could choose, you know, here, let's use the web forms capabilities with the MVC extensions and web API, and let's use a SPA template with that. And you'll get all these capabilities delivered to you in this template, right? This single page application template project that starts up. Well, at that point, you know, build your couple pages that will live and breathe as a single page application. But you know what? You might have that one page that you want to be a grid with data coming back from the server. Build it as a web form and then drop a grid on it, wire up the data source, and you're done. Skip writing a lot of that JavaScript because you know what? You're going to be a lot more productive when you do just that one really quick thing with web forms.
But you're saying that you can use web forms and MVC together. And yes. Let me push on that for a moment, because if you're using MVC, then you're creating a controller which is generating some of the view for you.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that play well with web forms where you're creating a new blank form and dragging controls on?
When you're running web forms, you don't interact with the base layout and the base controllers that are being used with the controllers that are being used in MVC, right? We have two different HTTP handlers that are kicking off those frameworks to handle my form request, to handle my MVC controller action request. So they're managed separately, and you can reuse things between them. There's some interesting techniques that you can use to reuse a master page from web forms in a MVC layout. These things are possible, but for the most part, they operate very, very separately from each other. And these HTTP handlers will keep things separate, but in the same memory space.
Is one of these approaches more appropriate for a web page versus a web application?
So let's clarify that a little bit. When you say a web page, what do you mean by a web page? Is that just my page that I'm going to put up on the web that has my resume on it? Or is it, what are we trying to?
I'm trying to distinguish between, for example, a restaurant or a store that wants to put up a few web pages with their menus and their prices and their contact information, as opposed to a full-fledged application that's running through a browser.
So I'm going to answer that question with, it depends. It depends on how much control you as the developer want over your application. Do you need to control every single angle bracket that's being delivered to the browser? Well, if the answer is yes, then go towards MVC. Don't turn away completely from web forms because there are, like I said, there are things in there that it's very, very good at. Or if you're comfortable with web forms and you know how to manage view state and you like that event lifecycle of a form, go for web forms. If you can manage it and you're okay with the types of markup that's going to be delivered for you and you like that abstraction over your content, go for it. And then add in those MVC pieces where you need it. I mean, there's no reason not to. If it makes sense to build something that's more testable and slimmer in MVC in your web forms application later, go for it. So the answer is, it depends. What are you most comfortable with? The idea that I want to make sure that developers hear is, use the parts, use this terrific tool set that's been provided to us in the way that makes you most happy. If it makes you happy to work in the event lifecycle, go for it. Learn how to optimize that and make the most of it. But if you want to have fine control over everything and you want to be able to use those rich JavaScript frameworks that are out there and not have the overhead of a view state that's hanging out there and a post back, go for MVC. Dial in that Angular.js. Dial in jQuery to its fullest. make the most of it. Use what makes you happy.
All right, let's turn this around. If I am a programmer who does his development with test-driven development and does that fairly rigorously, so I begin with the simplest test and implement only the simplest amount to get the test to pass and then refactor and then go back to building the next test and so on, if that's my approach, does that dictate or force or indicate which of these frameworks I should be using?
So out of the box, the standard web forms implementation is not testable. It's very, very hard to test because we don't have control over the web form constructor. And there's all kinds of things inside the page object that we really don't want to try and mock up and work with to handle postback and view state. You don't want to handle HTTP context. You don't want to try and mock that. It's a mess. So web forms in their initial basic state, not testable. If you want to be able to unit test your ASP.NET, you've got to consider MVC, Web API, SignalR. Those frameworks were very much developed with test-driven development in mind. But in the time since 2002, when we first saw web forms hit the scene, there's been a number of implementation patterns and child frameworks that have been built on top of web forms that will give us that test-driven approach, right? There's a saying when you look at MVC architectures that you want your views to be dumb. You want them to be stupid. You don't want them to have very much knowledge of what's going on inside the rest of your application. The controller and the model are doing that. They're the ones that are going and doing all that work, and they're just presenting to the view. Well, if we make our web forms dumb and don't give them a lot of knowledge, then there isn't that much for us to really test on there. So you'll see things like the web forms MVP project that do model view presenter type of architecture to make the web form more testable and pull that logic out into a presenter, into a model class that will give us a environment that we can test. Then your interactions with the controls and how they pass data back, that becomes an implementation detail that can be handled by a UI testing framework, not our test-driven things like NUnit, XUnit, MS tests.
What about data? Does the way that we access data or the framework that we use for data change as you move among these different frameworks?
You can use the same data access framework, the same repository pattern if you'd like, in all of these capabilities. Now, the challenge that some people may have is in the initial versions of web forms, really the recommended way and that demo way to get data loaded into your grid or into your form was you drag a SQL data control onto the design surface, you point it at a table or a series of stored procedures, and then you point your grid or your form at that data source and say, here's how you and specify all the data adapter methods, and away you went. That's not very, very portable or reusable using that type of SQL data source. But now, after ASP.NET 4.5, we have this great thing called model binding, and it's something that was brought into web forms from MVC, where we can now specify the model type, the item type on our data-driven web controls, and then we can set up select, insert, update, and delete methods as properties on those controls, and it will ASP.NET will obey by those specifications so that we can have that item type, you know, a product item type bound to our grid through a select method that returns a collection of products. Great. That select method could then appropriately hit our data access layer, and that data access layer can return entity framework, data sets, you know, whatever you want to use, and hibernate to fetch data and bring it back. Well, now we've got great reuse of that capability then, whether that data access layer is hitting MVC, web forms, web API, SignalR. It's a pretty good compromise to make.
But it is a compromise. It's not as decoupled as you see in MVC or MVVM.
It is a little bit of a compromise. It is not as decoupled, but it gets you that much closer to it from web forms, right? That you can now work with your strongly typed objects that you are using in those other frameworks, in with those other architectures and methodologies. And that reuse is something that wasn't really possible with web forms in the past.
Do I get closer still if I go over to MVC and perhaps also add in something like Knockout?
So here's the thing. When you start dialing in Knockout, Angular, some of these client-side technologies, I don't think you're getting closer to... I don't think you're making significant reuse of your data binding technologies. And my reasoning here is you're going to end up now duplicating your data access, your model objects, between the server and the client. Because on the server, we're going to be pulling out that data. We're going to be extracting it from our data source. And then we're going to turn it into some format that JavaScript is now going to interpret and use. Well, that's fine. You can straight serialize the JSON and away it goes. But that model that you've serialized in JSON and sent down, there's things now that depend on that format. And now you're maintaining two different models and two different sets of code that depend on two different models that represent the same business object. Things can start to get a little dicey there. So I don't know that you're getting closer to a data utopia, but you're getting into what I think may not be the dry, the don't repeat yourself, the driest scenario for a web developer. It starts to feel like an anti-pattern at that point.
Well, let's just clarify. Are you advocating then that the data should remain on the server and that the Ajax and other approaches that try to move more of that processing to the client is wet, is undry?
Wet. That's a great way to put it. No, I think that there's a time and place for that, for shipping just data to the client. Certainly Ajax capabilities have been around for a long time now. We've been doing Ajax in one form or another since Internet Explorer 4. And we called it dynamic HTML way back then, DHTML. And it's got its place. It can be overused. And that's where I think it starts to feel like an anti-pattern when you do that for more and more and more of your capabilities. It's a matter of maintainability. When you start pushing that much data down and you're doing so much less on the server, the client ends up doing more work. The server knows less and less about what's actually going on, and that could turn into a security problem because the server, right? The server doesn't always know what's coming back to it, so we need to build out stronger and stronger verification on the server. And the client's delivering JavaScript. JavaScript's a dynamic language. Anybody can modify that JavaScript while it's living in your browser. So you need to be careful, and your models need to be maintained both in JavaScript and in C Sharp or VB or whatever your server-side language du jour is.
At this point, we may have convinced anybody who is a prospective ASP.NET programmer that it's too big and too scary and too overwhelming. So how do people get started? How do they come up the learning curve?
Well, they need to listen to your course on Pluralsight. No.
Good plug. Well done.
There you go.
And on that note, thank you very much for joining us.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. You don't have to jump into everything all at once. There's a lot going on at the same time in the ASP.NET environment. At one count, there's as many as six different languages that you're going to be hitting at the same time when you build a very cohesive solution here. That number six keeps coming up.
I noticed that. So what do we got? We got C Sharp. We got JavaScript. That's two.
There's two.
CSS and HTML5. Does that make four?
Sure. There's four.
And Razor?
Razor. Yep. You've got the Razor formatting engine when you're working with MVC.
That's five.
And then when you're doing your data access, you need to know SQL.
Ah. Well done.
So that's a lot.
Can you name the seven dwarfs now? You were saying.
It is a lot to pick up and learn. And what's going to be very exciting for new developers coming into this is instead of sitting down and looking at a brand new MVC application and saying, well, what's a controller? A controller, you know, doesn't build HTML. But here's this view thing over there, and it's got a model being passed into it, and I don't know where that model is coming from, and having to go through this architecture learning curve that's being thrust upon them. You can just build that web form inside that MVC-based application in the one ASP.NET world and use the design surface as we always have and work with just HTML at that point. Great. And you can slowly learn the other things that are out there. Start with the HTML. Start with the markup that's coming down. Learn how those pieces work together, and then start figuring out how to generate them. Oh, I need a table in my client-side UI. Okay, well, we can do that with a grid. So let's start with a web form grid. Oh, now we want to learn how to do that with MVC so that we can test it. Okay, well, now let's start learning how to use some MVC extensions that generate tables and grids, and then how those pieces fit together. And once you start understanding these pieces, you can move from the most abstracted, from the metal, from the server, right, the web forms, to something that's much, much closer, like MVC, and then Web API and SignalR. I think there's a path here to learn and progress and be able to use all of these things without jumping right into learning the architecture of how models, views, and controllers work together, and the HTTP action methods and the status codes that need to be reported when a web API method fails. You know, these are things that you can hold off on, and you can start simpler.